is a podcast called Walk, Talk, Listen. An attempt to connect people and make this world a bit better by sharing opinions and experiences based on the belief that everyone's perspective is true, albeit partial. My name is Maurice Bloem, and I would like to welcome you to yet another episode of Walk, Talk, Listen.
I'm an ordained minister in the United Church of Christ. I spent most of my ministerial life working as a parish minister in three different congregations, the last congregation I led for 20 years. A wonderful, large, urban congregation in the center of Berkeley, California, where I got to do lots of justice work. It was great. Currently, I'm the chair of CWS's board of directors, and I'm having such a good time with that job, getting to know lots of amazing people, and being able to lead the board through a time of transition and challenge. So I'm enjoying post-retirement life in a new way.
And you and I, we have something in common, right?
We do. We're both of Dutch extraction. You a little, probably a little more directly than me, but I come from a long line. Actually, I don't know if you know this, Maurice, I come from a line of some pastors and teachers. So my great-great-grandfather was a dominie in the Neder-Dutch Reformed Church. So it was somehow, it got passed on to me, skipped a couple generations and got passed on to me. Of course, he might roll in his grave. I don't know if he approved of women in ministry, but we'll skip that one and hope he did.
Oh, I didn't know that. Oh, so that's interesting. Yeah.
Oh, you didn't? Oh,
no.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
You know that, you know, since 2012, I walk 100 miles to raise awareness about hunger and poverty and you know, raise funds as well. May I ask if, you know, you would be asked to walk 100 miles for a cause or for something, you know, why would you walk 100 miles?
Well, if you remember, you were out here in my home area about 5 years ago, and you walked 100 miles, and I walked a couple of those miles with you. I think the thing that would put me to walking is CWS. If I could walk 100 miles, I'd walk 100 miles for somebody else. Especially a refugee, especially a person applying for asylum, especially someone who can't walk those miles across the border themselves without seriously endangering themselves or their children. So you're right in a place that I would like to be walking. I know you're walking for others, and I would walk for justice if I could walk.
May I ask you, what drives you in life? You know, what brought you where you are today? And is it where you are today, is it where you would like to be also?
Yeah, I think that at this moment in my life, I feel like I'm realizing all the things that my life has given to me and has taught me. And so I think I've always had a longing for justice. And I've had a longing to watch how life can change if people stand up and are counted. And so as a pastor, I never just had a congregation where I preached and took care of people. I always wanted to move people's lives in the direction of justice and liberation. So in all the congregations that I've been in, there's always been a social justice component. I was at Riverside Church in the 80s and worked with William Sloan Coffin. And in those years, we did everything from becoming a just peace church to working on issues of racial inclusion. And we were the first congregation, actually, that became open and affirming, welcoming gay and lesbian people. And I've seen that kind of quest for justice in every church that I've been in, and then in the personal aspects of my life. And so now, even at this point in my life, I feel like I get to do that in such an amazing way as chair of NGO that is actively working on issues of justice globally. It's been a great honor and kind of a culmination, I guess, of all of my longings throughout my life.
You know what is, and I know actually, you know, when we walk together, we talked a lot about, you know, life and, you know, why I walk, why you walked. And many of those conversations that I have actually with young and old are often about, you know, religion and spirituality. And it seems that, you know, this younger generation kind of, you know, looks differently or perceives, experiences, so, you know, spirituality and religion differently than, you know, the older generation. How do you look at that? And is there indeed a difference? And what is the reason? And, you know, you as a faith leader, you know, is what type of role is there for you to play?
You know, Maurice, it's interesting. I've always looked at myself as both rather than one or the other. I have always felt that I'm a religious person, and I've always felt that I was a spiritual person. So I've done both. I lived my professional life in an institution, in a congregation where I got to, with others, practice the rhythm of religion. But my whole life, I think I've also followed a mystic's journey. And I think the mystic is the one who knows they're being called forward out of a deep, maybe sometime unnamed longing, but there's a stirring in the heart that pulls us forward. I feel like I've always had that kind of stirring. I think the one thing that's really important in my generation, in yours, and in generations to come, is that that stirring is not only about being comfortable and enjoying ourselves where we are, but to have a deep and profound longing to move our lives towards the opening of justice. In that way, you know, Jesus is a real model for me and almost a pointer. I'd have to say a pointer that the life of Christ, as I've read it and studied it and preached it, says to us to really understand and embrace the liberation and the need for justice for others as well as ourselves. And I think even more now in generations, I work with Emerging Leaders Project across the United States. So I work with the younger generation, younger than myself, and I'm with them as an elder. That's the name that they've given me, an elder. And I see in them the same kind of spark of longing for justice and love as I felt many years ago. And I think that that's that ember in Christianity, which is so powerful and important, that fire that burns so that the world may be a more just and loving place, because we're in it and we're willing to work on behalf of others.
So that's kind of interesting, is that how you explained how you relate both with religion as well as spirituality and how that plays a role. What I've heard from a lot of young people that I've spoken with for this particular project is that, you know, the role of the church, there seem to be a disconnect. Some, you know, that's not a place anymore where they feel comfortable or feel welcome. How do you see that? And
In many cases, I would have to agree. I think that in some ways, we over-institutionalized the church. We made it more about the success of the church or denominations than we did about fulfilling the call to justice. But then the other side of that is, I think that the church has been kind of a remarkable community which has stood for justice for all of these years, and that as we've looked at change in culture and society, it has many times come from the church. If you even look at the life of Martin Luther King, we know that church was in him and propelled him into a life of justice. So I'm with young people in that I think we over-institutionalized faith, hope, and love. But also, I know that there has been a cultural place in society where the church has stood for transformation. In the cases where the church stands for transformation, I think the younger generation would stand with the church. But in a way that the church has been used to not move and to pull people into kind of the rigors of comfort rather than transformation, I think the younger generation is accurate.
You have been a part of the leader in a church, right, yourself until you retired. When you look back at your last period, and I think it was it in Berkeley?
Yes.
Okay. And what are the
actually,
moments?
I was a pastor in a church in South Africa after I retired.
Oh, that's
for
true.
A while.
That's yeah. true. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. But I would like to talk about the time in Berkeley, because that was a longer period of time, right?
Oh, yes.
Okay. If you look back, what is a moment where you're really proud, where you think, I was spot on and how, I handled that or facilitated that? And then another moment where you thought, I think there I missed the mark.
That's such an interesting question. It takes me back a little ways. I've been gone for over 5 years, but I think the really powerful moments, we became an open and affirming congregation during my tenure. We actually embraced same-sex marriage at a very early moment. There was a window in San Francisco and in the Bay Area where same-sex marriages became legal. And I think I must have married 12 to 20 couples in the period of about 8 weeks. And we really saw that as a statement for justice. So all of that work I felt was very powerful and compelling. I probably wouldn't change a lot, because over the many years of our work, I think that our congregation became more and more open to transformation and to the idea that the church is a living organism, and became much more able to embrace a wider world over time. So I wouldn't change a lot.
Yeah, I would like to take a sidestep to the person you just nodded to. You're living together with a very special man, one of the smartest philosophers in the US. Can you explain to me, what living with Sam Keen? What that did to you in your own growth and who you are today?
That's a beautiful question for right now. For those who don't know Sam, he's a philosopher and a theologian and one of these wonderful thinkers, a bridge thinker. So I think one of Sam's big gifts has been to wed actually spirituality and psychology. And if anything, if a gift so many profound gifts have been given through my marriage with Sam, so many profound gifts. But I'd say the one that I probably treasure most deeply is I feel I understand the spiritual journey in a deeper way because I am married to Sam. He's not an institutional person. And so Sam has really seen himself as a person who looks at culture and society from almost the outside in. And, you know, I am so much a community and a culture person. And so I think the gift that Sam has really blessed me with and where our marriage, I think, has been just uniquely special has been both of us are very deep questers and both of us have a deep desire for the mystic's journey, for the journey towards God, the journey that envelops the sacred and the holy in our everyday. Sam has given me that gift.
For all the listeners, you know, who are not familiar with the work of Sam Keen, I would definitely advise you to Google and buy one of his books.
And read any of those many books he's written, exactly.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah.
Pat, you know, a lot is going on in the world, and especially the last 7 months, it kind of accelerated, right? Because of COVID, racial justice issues. Now we are, you know, this country is in the middle of elections. So there seems to be a lot to worry about, or at least let me speak for myself. I worry about many things. What are some of the things that you worry about at the moment for the U.S. and the world, you know, in as a whole?
Well, I mean, today we don't know for sure who our next president will be. So I constantly am worried about the divisions in our culture and the divisions in our nation. I have so many concerns about white nationalism and white supremacy, and I am a Black Lives Matter person the whole way. So I worry about racial justice, and I worry about it getting swept under a rug if one party should prevail. But I worry about our not being able to speak to each other about these things and are not being able to go across the aisle, that our divide may be too big. And so I live in a bubble. I live in a very liberal, progressive state and a very liberal, progressive community. And I really worry that bubble could burst in a way all over the country, in a way that makes many, many people unhappy. And I hope it wouldn't become violent ever, but I know that that's always at the edges of these great liberation movements. So I think about that a lot.
Well, knowing you, I also know that you are, you know, also continue to be a person that sees a glass half full. So there are always hopes as well. So what is the
hope? Well, you know, I would put CWS at the center of my hope because I just wrote a letter to all of our staff around the world, just voicing the board's spirit of thanksgiving for their work and for their presence around the world. I think if I was only an American and didn't see myself as a global citizen, if I didn't have friends all over the world, and, you know, I have regular conversations with friends beyond the U.S., I think I would feel the isolation and the loneliness of being just one country. But I have, and I intentionally work on an understanding of myself as a global citizen, and I want friends and community and even a sense of family to go beyond my ordinary sense of self in my comfort zone. I come from a very white evangelical community, and I grew up in kind of an isolated way. And my real journey has been to break out of that kind of sense of privilege, to unite with other people and other activities in the world. I think chief among them for me has been relationships in South Africa, where I pastored and also have really good friends. And so I have the blessing, I think, of looking at race relations from the point of view even of those who struggled through apartheid and are still struggling and in the struggle today. And that makes a big difference in the way that I even see our U.S. politics and the way that others are treated in the world. So, I think I have an understanding of myself as a global citizen, and that really has made a difference. And that's funny, you know, Maurice, because here I am, I'm on this farm in Sonoma, right? But I feel like the world is really where my identity and where my belonging is placed.
Okay, my last question for you is, do you have a message for a final message for the listeners of this podcast?
Yeah, you know, I've been thinking about these old words from my most dear mentor, and they are, hope arouses as nothing else a passion for the possible. And I feel like I am a person of hope. And up out of that hope, you know, I really do feel like we have a possibility to move into things that we're scared of, that we're excited about, that we think we can't achieve, and that we've put on the back burner because something else came into our lives. So I think if we remain hopeful people, that we probably can achieve and accomplish those dreams and those passions that keep us alive and keep us awake at night. So hope arouses as nothing else a passion for the possible.
Wow. And I can tell our listeners that, you know, we know each other for quite a number of years now, is that what you just shared, you know, those are not only words, but you are definitely a person that also puts that in real action. So I would like to thank you for this conversation, but also thank you for, you know, who you are and what you do.
I would like to thank you for those great, great questions. Thanks, Maurice.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to Walk, Talk, Listen. Please check us out on www.100mile.org or follow us on Facebook.